Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Election Day Hangover Edition. Dom, little hair of the dog, man. We'll
get happy through hour it. Now, man. We'll be just fine.
It's the happier happy hour, and I'm happy to announce we got a fine guest right from the top. He is John Nichols from The Nation, friend of ours. John, welcome back to what some say is the greatest radio show ever.
Hey, John.
Hey, it's good to be with you. I just want to start out by apologizing to the American people for having participated in a process that forced them to listen to Kevin McCarthy.
We blame you, John.
John, I'm not exactly sure what happened last night, but I'm pretty damn sure Republicans lost. What was your take on
that? Here's how to start the conversation. Look, think about how you felt 24 hours ago.
Stressed. Right?
I mean, generally, everybody I was talking to, even the most optimistic people I knew, were saying, oh my gosh, this is a miserable, awful situation. It's looking really bad. Hoping, you know, maybe a few Democrats can hang on. You know, there might possibly be, you know, we might possibly be able to, you know, form a rear guard action and defend democracy as best possible before it's completely dismantled. You know, it was a pretty stark and ugly moment. Now, 24 hours later, we're looking at a situation where Kevin McCarthy, the most inept man in American politics, he still hasn't, you know, they've declared like almost 400 seats. He still doesn't have a majority. And Mitch McConnell, the most crooked man in American politics, he's not got, he didn't have a majority in the U.S. Senate, and it's looking like he may not get there. And then as regards governors, the Democrats, you know, actually picked up two governorships. They've won several legislative chambers around the country. They've defended their ability to sustain vetoes for Democratic governors in states across the country. You know, on balance, for a midterm election, it's the best that Democrats have had since 1962 when John Kennedy was fighting, you know, to keep Democrats in a position of power immediately after the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it's been 60 years since Democrats have done this well in a midterm.
Well, I didn't...
In a midterm where they had a Democratic president in
the first term.
Yeah. To make that clear. Yeah.
Well, again, I didn't perceive it as such a great night for Team Blue as a god-awful night for Republicans. That's a party of disarray,
well,
John.
Look, comrade, when you're in a battle, you know, when there are two players, if your opponent goes down, you win. And so that's what happened, right? It isn't that the Democrats necessarily prevailed because they did everything right, because, you know, we could spend the next 3 or 4 hours talking about everything they did wrong. but the fact of the matter is that while the Democrats screwed up on a lot of stuff, including not really having an economic message, you know, during an inflation crisis, the Republicans screwed it up worse. And so at the end of the day, you end up with a situation where in a midterm election, where on average, the party that is out of power picks up 31 seats in the House of Representatives and 2 seats in the U.S. Senate, and usually sweeps the governorships, none of that happened. So, you know, this is a pretty good midterm for the Democrats.
Yeah.
John Nichols from The Nation. How about here in the state of Wisconsin, John? Mostly... we had very little change, but then there was the U.S. Senate seat. And obviously everyone saw Ron Johnson as being the most vulnerable incumbent Republican on the ballot because Joe Biden had won the state. Democrats had done fairly well, at least in statewide elections. Well, here's the troubling part. Not only was Ron a participant in the January 6th, and people apparently are just fine with that compared to, you know, racist ads targeting at Mandela Barnes. But also, Van Orden, this insurrectionist in the 3rd CD, congressman insurrectionist, we'll be calling him soon. Very troubling from that regard. Apparently, you know, we only favor democracy by very thin margins here.
Again, this is a situation where the Democrats screwed up, you know, and I'm not here to beat up the Democrats. They had a pretty good night, and I think it was better than expected. We should get to talking about Tony Evers, who I think ran one of the best campaigns I've ever seen in Wisconsin and got the rewards for it. But recognize this, the Democratic Party abandoned Brad Pfaff out in the 3rd District. So Brad Pfaff, on his own, literally putting up his own signs, got himself to over 48% of the vote. I mean, he got himself to virtually to victory with almost no serious support for the National Democratic Party. Complete abandonment. And then Mandela Barnes, you know, after his primary win, the Democrats allowed him to be outspent by $6 million in that key period after the primary, when all those negative ads, those racist ads were running. Mandela Barnes gets outspent by $6 million. That knocks him down in the polls, 6 points in the Marquette poll. He was, you know, looking in a pretty bad position. And then this remarkable candidate, and I'm going to give him a lot of credit, he goes into those debates, despite everything that's been thrown at him. He prevails in the debate. He then campaigns with Barack Obama at a key event, goes out and works his fingers to the bone, does an incredible campaign in the final weeks, and is literally gaining about a half point a day. Like, it's rare that you see a candidate surge as much as Mandela Barnes did in the last, you know, 10 days of this campaign.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, if the Democrats hadn't let him get down 6 points at that critical early stage, he would have been building from a point of strength, and I would argue would have won an easy victory. So, you know, it's still a time to celebrate a lot of good news, recognize a lot of good things that happened. But at some point, you want to start pointing fingers of blame. I mean, I think you have to recognize that the National Democrats did not read Wisconsin right. If they had read Wisconsin right, what was a pretty good night in Wisconsin could have been a great night.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. John Nichols from The Nation and Cap Times joining us. John, the Republicans, as former President Barack Obama mentioned in Milwaukee at North Division High School, they do have an economic message, and they're fairly consistent about it. It's tax cuts, John. Inflation, tax cuts, right? Everything's tax cuts.
So they're for redistribution of the wealth.
You're right.
Upward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to push back a little bit on your premise, John, though. I was optimistic. You know, as a little role switching here in the Devil's Advocates, usually it's Crudy, and I'm the pessimistic one. But, I mean, given all the information that we've seen, what we know, and the trajectory, the trends from what MAGA, when they elected Donald Trump, and what has happened since then, I think it was kind of par for the course. Given what you said, historically speaking, certainly almost a great circumstance, but it could have been better. And I know you mentioned in some other interviews, John, I saw your Twitter stream, about the messaging from the Democrats. Not only did they perhaps lose some opportunities in western Wisconsin, but perhaps could have been more succinct and sharp on the messaging. Your thoughts, John?
100%. I mean, come on. How hard is it to, you know, in an inflationary moment, and remember, inflation's real, right? It's not something
that
you can talk your way around and say, hey, you know, look the other way. There's something else to think about. No, if people are paying dramatically more for gas, for food, for, you know, the basics of life, they're going to notice it. And if they're afraid that it's going to get worse, that's a problem. So how hard is it to say price gouging, corporate greed, going to give us some power, give us a little more power there to whip the Democrats in shape, and we will use that power to take on the corporations, lower the prices for your gas with the windfall profits tax and other interventions, lower the prices for your food, do more production in the U.S., and, you know, because it works, we'll, you know, and you're suffering a little bit, we'll give you all a $1,000 check, make some promises, right? It wouldn't have been that hard, but they didn't do it. And so they let the Republicans run a whole campaign based on inflation's really bad. Vote for us. They didn't even have a plan, but because the Democrats didn't have a counter message, the Republicans filled that space. Now, the thing that saved the Democrats, the thing that saved the Democrats is something that I think surprised at least a few people, not me, and I think obviously not you, was that when those exit polls came out, abortion rights was almost as high an issue as inflation.
Yeah.
And so that was the saving grace. That was the fact that even though the Democrats didn't have a message on the number one issue, they did have a clear message on the number two issue. Everybody knew the Democrats were running as a pro-choice party, the Republicans as the anti-choice. And so as a result, Democrats were able to fill that void. And, you know, I have very little question that the choice issue saved Tony Evers and Josh Call, especially Josh Call, a very close win. I think it was absolutely essential to their victories. And I think it probably also saved the Republican ability to sustain veto, or Democratic ability to sustain vetoes in the state legislature. So the choice issue proved to be a really vital one. And boy, I'll tell you, when I saw especially all those young people turning out to vote on the college campuses, I think this was a central issue.
John Nichols, let's spend the last minute or so talking about Tony Evers. You said you thought he had a very effective campaign. What was so good about it?
Okay, so this is an evenly divided state, right? The last six presidential campaigns, four of them were decided by under 25,000 votes. So closely divided state. Tony Evers came in and, you know, more than doubled his victory margin from the last race. How did he do it? By attacking hard. He went after Tim Michaels very, very aggressively by focusing on the issues and basically selling himself as a boring, decent guy. It was a great campaign, an outstanding message, and it gave him a pretty tremendous victory.
Holy mackerel, that's our buddy John Nichols from The Nation. John, appreciate you coming around, sharing a hangover with us the day after the election. John Nichols, talk to you real soon, my friend.
Thank you, John.
All right. I will talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We're going to take a few phone calls from you now. Maybe name some winners and losers from last night's big election right here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm looking at you, Tim Michaels, thinking loser. And give you the phone number quick before Ben Wickler comes, 844-967-2789.
Holy mackerel, folks.
Malarkey. The Devil's Advocates invented malarkey.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open for your take. 844-967-2789. Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, going to join us at the bottom of the hour.
Dominic, want to thank John Nichols and want to bring to your attention a newest piece from Dan Bice. He always writes up the big winners and losers. Well, I would say the winners, the big winners, listeners of the Devil's Advocate radio show. Absolutely.
Congratulations, everybody. You're welcome.
And the civic media coverage last night, it was comprehensive. It was stellar. Soon to be award winning, I suspect. But anyways, let's get to the winners and the losers. Eight unexpected winners and losers from Tuesday's election whose names didn't appear on your ballot. Oh, being creative, Dan Pice. We were all told to expect a red wave, but what we got was the status quo. After all the TV and radio ads, mostly from the right, I'm adding that part because I didn't hear a lot of them radio ads, all the mailers and all the text messages, so many text messages, Wisconsin voters decided they pretty much liked what they already had. The voters decided they wanted four more of Governor Tony Evers. They wanted four more of Attorney General Josh Call. And apparently we wanted six more years of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
4 years. Oh, my God.
Dom, I did recently point out he had promised us on this fine program he was only running twice. So he's something of a liar.
Liar.
So much for being the citizen legislator, Dan Bice writes. In truth, the formula for Johnson, a Republican, and Evers, a Democrat, was incredibly similar. The two incumbents and their deep-pocketed allies hit their opponents early and often in the general election, saying that they were too extreme for Wisconsin, though for very different reasons. And Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, a Democrat challenging Johnson, and businessman Tim Michaels, a Republican opposing Evers, failed to respond quickly and effectively. If someone, this is a quote, prominent Republican, if someone is spending millions calling you soft on crime in the case of Mandela Barnes, or saying your company looks the other way on sexual harassment claims, you better respond on the same medium with the same intensity.
Right.
Neither Barnes nor Michaels did. And as Dan Bice writes, there you go. And here are the other winners and losers from Tuesday night's general election. Dom, give me a winner.
Crudy, a winner, according to Dan Bice, old tweets. If Elon Musk ends up killing Twitter, he will be doing a big favor to many a future political candidate. But until that day, we in the media would ask all those thinking of running for political office to leave their old tweets alone and let us decide whether your clever posts on Trump, Russian propaganda TV, George Washington, AOC, and Ali Khamenei should be shared with the general public. We'll gladly do the work. Much appreciated.
Another winner, Tom. Democracy, baby.
Woohoo.
Look at that. The polls closed long ago. We had several close races, and no one is claiming that anything was rigged. Well, that's because Rojo won, but I could see Tim Michaels having made that sort of call, and I can absolutely see Amy Loudenbeck doing so if that Supreme Court, the Secretary of State race is down to 5,000 or 6,000 votes. And that's how you do it, folks, according to Daniel Bice. Consider Michaels talking about eliminating the State Elections Commission and perhaps even decertifying the 2020 election. But even though he lost, his side is not calling for a federal investigation or examination of voting machines. Well, not yet, Dom. Give him time. Give him time. As Bice writes, instead, people are blaming his loss on any number of other factors, including the lack of a clear agenda, his support for former President Donald Trump, and his hardline position on abortion. Here's another quote, Dom, from a Republican, not named here by Bice. GOP also underestimated the strength of abortion issue with younger voters. You thunk?
Crudy.
Wait.
What? Yes, go ahead.
One other possibility. Maybe Tim Michaels was just a really bad candidate.
Yes. See, as I told you, man, he did everything right except they had a terrible candidate. Another loser, according to Bice, the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Two people, both of them now facing criminal charges, helped expose shortcomings in the state's voting system in the past month. Racine resident Harry Waite has pleaded not guilty to election fraud after he requested absentee ballots in the names of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Racine Mayor Corey Mason, and others. Former Milwaukee Election Commission's Deputy Director Kimberly Zapata was charged with a felony and three misdemeanors after asking for absentee ballots reserved for members of the military and having them sent to a Republican lawmaker. It shouldn't have been that easy to get the fraudulent ballots, but it was. Now both incidents will serve as fodder for Voss and other Republican lawmakers as they decide the fate of the beleaguered commission. You know, the commission that the Republicans created.
Dominic, I actually want to jump ahead here, so I will acknowledge another winner, according to Dan Bice. Gridlock. But here's the one I would like to roll out for the audience. Loser, friendly primaries. This is a pet peeve of yours truly. The Democrats never challenge one another in the primaries. There's no real competition going on there. They're all, oh, I appreciate my colleague and he's so smart. Well, then why are you running against that person? Because whoever has the greatest name recognition on the first day they enter the race, see at the finish line. That's the way it usually works. But anyways, as Bice writes, Democratic rep, our pal, Mark Pocan, is a firm believer in friendly Democratic primaries. He even calls Democratic candidates in competitive primaries if he thinks they're being too tough on the others. Well, the oh-so-friendly Democratic primary in the U.S. Senate race, most of the candidates even dropped out before Election Day, didn't do Mandela Barnes any favors. He came across as unvetted, unprepared when Johnson and his allies unleashed their attack ads days into the general election. Here's to primaries that look more like real elections and less like high school reunions, according to Dan Bice. I agree with that, mostly.
Yes.
Throw the elbows in the primaries. If you're going to expose the chinks, I want to hear about it in the primaries.
Okay, do you do the same thing that the Republicans do? Do you run the ads and darken Mandela's skin? I mean, to what degree are you trying to
prep? At your own peril,
well,
you
I
do
know,
that.
But this is what I'm saying, though. But that's what they're going to be expecting. How do you prep for that as a candidate?
Well, I don't think there's any Democrat in their right mind that would think that is a winning formula for a primary, Dom. But guess what? Here it comes, and the result was a loss for Mandela Barnes in this case. Come back, Ben Wickler, Democratic Party Chair, great state of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Election Hangover Edition. Some feeling better than others. We're all feeling great, though, because we got a fine guest to introduce. He's the Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman, Ben Wickler. Ben, I'm calling this a blue wave. At least a fairly good blue outcome. Ben, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ben.
Thanks so much. Hey, guys. Such a pleasure to be with you. This is one way to think about it is that there was a red wave that was met by a blue wave, and the blue wave won. You know, this was 2018. We had this explosive turnout. We hit those same numbers this time. And this time, we almost tripled the margin of victory for Tony Evers against the Republican. And in the Senate race, despite a huge spending advantage, we came within a percentage point of defeating Ron Johnson, which, I mean, it's a heartbreaker, but it is also a testament to Mandela running way ahead of what the dollars, any of the pollsters, any of the predictors and prognosticators thought. This is the closest loss that we have in the country in any Senate race. And it's one of the top three closest Senate races in the country. And Mandela Barnes has essentially been written off by national Democrats. They were sending money to Florida and Ohio instead of Wisconsin. Sound familiar? So I have to say, I'm so proud of everyone who went to bat, so proud of our candidates, and we still have a democracy in the state of Wisconsin going into 2023 and 2024. That is a big win.
Ben, you were there today when Mandela Barnes conceded, or at least I thought I saw you in the crowd. Ben, he was forward-looking in his concession speech.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was very proud to stand next to him, his parents, Gwen Moore, as he gave a speech that, you know, was not the speech he wanted to be giving at this moment. He ran so hard. He did 100 stops in the last 16 days of this race. But he said, look, he energized voters, young voters, voters of color and white voters, rural, suburban, and urban, folks across the state of Wisconsin in this big project of building the state that we're trying to be able to build. And so he's not giving up. I don't think any of us should give up. The fact that he came this close this time in a year with a Democratic president, midterms always go against the president's party, that suggests that there could be a very different outcome 6 years from now, and there's a lot of other stuff to win in between. This is a movement that crosses, it's not only the Democratic Party and Democrats, but it is grassroots organizations, unions, anyone who thinks that we should be a state where everyone can thrive, not just the few. And that movement is rolling forward and is demonstrating they can win in very, very tough conditions. It's deeply inspiring.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Ben, congratulations. A good night. Not a great night, but a solid night, especially considering all the variables. The youth turnout, I got to be honest, Ben, with the Roe v. Wade and seeing the lines at the campuses and college and the reporting, I think the youth really came out, and it's great. It's inspiring to see people that this is not just about elections. This is self-governance, and self-governance requires people to stay engaged. And I'm hoping that's what we can continue to do. I mean, hell, we got another primary coming up in February, Ben. I know we can, perhaps take a breather for a moment, but this still continues. So the youth and people getting out to engage in self-governance is certainly, to my mind, inspiring. Ben, what about the other turnouts did you see? What were you really impressed with?
Well, I underscore 1,000 times what you're saying about young voters in our state. you know, in 2010 and 2014, there was this myth arose that young people don't care about midterm elections. They're never going to turn out in midterms. Well, they turned out in 18 and we won every office in the state. And then we have a Democratic president. They didn't disappear. They turned out yet again. We have at least some of the highest youth turnout in the country. I would be interested to see. We might turn out to have the highest campus turnout in the United States this year. We've been in the top three for the last several election cycles. That is a youth quake, and it is essential to how we win elections. But I'll point to a couple of other things as well. Republicans are losing ground in the suburbs around Milwaukee, and people thought that maybe this was just the anti-Trump effect. Well, Trump was not on the ballot. Trump did not show up here during the general election. These are people who see the extremism of the whole Republican Party, from Tim Michaels to Ron Johnson to Eric Toney for Attorney General and everywhere else, and they're saying, no, that is not the kind of state we want to live in. And in rural areas, Tony Evers ran several points ahead of where he did in 2018. And that's a testament to Democrats who've never given up and the work that as the party, the candidates have done to shore up Democratic support, even in the deep red parts of our state. I'm just really, don't get me started on the explosive turnout in Dane County and the leapfrogging over voter suppression in Milwaukee. I'm proud of everybody for going to bat across this great state.
It was a great get out the vote effort, Ben, and everyone involved to be commended. Reflection, looking back, though, we see Brad Paff came up short on the western side of the state. I've seen some criticism online of the DCCC. Ben, can you tell our viewers your perception of how all that one went down?
So there's two sides of the coin. The Wisconsin side, which is the side that I live on, is that if you go back in time and the DCCC says we're going to be in this to win this, we're going to do everything we can to support Brad Paff. He landed 4 points behind after being outspent something like 4-1 and had a winning message. And he's just a better fit for the district than Derek Van Orden, who moved there in order to grab a political position. I think we could have won that race in a different world. The other side of the coin is this is an incredibly tight race for the House majority, which no one thought was going to be possible. And so the folks nationally who were making these decisions were looking at all these districts that are on a knife's edge right now. So, you know, it's hard to be in their shoes, but I will say I will always do what I did during this election, which is to call on our national partners to put more resources into our state. And I think the way that Brad Paff showed up in a year and in a district that was looking tough actually gives us a lot of hope for 2 years from now.
Yeah.
And that district is absolutely purple. And I think Brad is a tremendous candidate there.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He is Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Ben, perhaps the most troubling takeaway from last night. I know that Mandela Barnes late in the campaign talked about the fact that U.S. Senator Ron Johnson participated, was a willing conduit of the fraudulent Trump electors and wanted to give them to the vice president. Above and beyond that, we know that now Congressman-elect Van Orden should be called insurrectionist Van Orden. And the election's over, but the people in the third CD of the state of Wisconsin, even though it was a close margin, Ben, they hired an insurrectionist to represent them. We talked about the fact democracy was on the ballot last night. But in this specific regard, in regards to the January 6th, I'm not sure if Wisconsin voters passed that test. And that's very troubling to me, Ben.
Well, I will say there was another insurrectionist on the ballot in a district nested within the 3rd Congressional District, which is Dave Essenson, who was on the wall next to the Capitol with Derek Van Orden. And Dave Essenson ran for state Senate against Jeff Smith in a rural district, and Jeff Smith defeated him by 5 percentage points. So that was a definite triumph. Part of that was because in that race, Jeff Smith had the resources to be able to make sure voters knew just how extreme Essenson was. And in a congressional race, unfortunately, the state party doesn't have the same kind of legal leeway to be able to provide that kind of support to the congressional candidate. But this was a very, very hard year for congressional candidates to raise the money, to be able to run the ads, to get the word out to people. What we saw in research in this election was that when voters knew that Derek Van Orden had gone to the insurrection, and when they knew that he was on probation for trying to bring a gun on a plane, that he yelled at a teenage library page, they voted for a bad path. I think it's not that he didn't have a winning message. He did. It's just that not enough people heard it. As they say, it's not just what you say, it's what they hear. And if you're not able to communicate at the level that people actually hear it, it's hard to make that dent. I would not put this on the voters. I think if we rerun that race and have equal communication volume on both sides, I think we could win. And I think Brad did a very effective job of using the very tough hand that he was dealt. But you're right. I mean, democracy is still at risk. And unfortunately, I don't think we'll be able to say that 2024 is a less significant election than 2022, because we're going to have to fight to make sure that we don't wind up in a situation where people who don't want to allow the legitimate results of an election to be counted can have power over our country.
Ben Wickler, Democratic Party Wisconsin Chair. Ben, I'd love to give the audience a break, talk about, you know, old-fashioned recipes, something of that sort. The threat from the former president, Donald Trump, is that he's going to announce his candidacy next week, and that will basically be game on for 2024. Ben, as I look out nationally, I see that Ron DeSantis won re-election effectively in the state of Florida, and that seemingly would strengthen his candidacy for the presidency. Ben, I know that the Democrats aren't happy with the way that Iowa went the last time around, but because of circumstances and logistics and who controls state legislatures, the Republicans have already locked in their schedule, and it includes Iowa, South Carolina, Nevada, etc., and New Hampshire. I'm sorry to exclude the Granite State. Are the Democrats, as you're hearing it, Ben, considering we're going to turn to the presidential perhaps as soon as next week, sir, are the Democrats locked in now? Are we stuck with Iowa, like it or not?
There's a process underway at the Democratic National Committee where they've gotten bids from a ton of different states to join the ranks of the early vote. Iowa has to bid alongside other states. I wrote a letter recommending our friends in Minnesota and Michigan as early primary states. Both states applied. Wisconsin did not. I think we have plenty on our minds, and I don't like the idea of negotiating with Robin Voss to get him to move our primary date to February. So for us, you know, I think it's good to have upper Midwestern states as part of that process. But I will say that our focus here is less on the primary schedule for 24 and more on the state Supreme Court race on April 4th of 2023, because that race will shape almost as much as the fight against Republican supermajorities and the fight for our governorship. That race will determine whether we have a free and even playing field or whether we have a state Supreme Court that invents wild ways to suppress the vote. I was knocking on doors before, or on election day. I talked to someone whose daughter had filled out an absentee ballot and then left for a 72-hour shift as an EMT across the state. Her dad tried to return that absentee ballot and was told, no, that is now illegal because of a Supreme Court decision. That's voter suppression. And winning that Supreme Court race is how we can build democracy, build back better, as it were, in the next 6 months.
Ben Wickler, you talk about the Supreme Court race. Let's think about that for just a minute. We've got Judge Janet Protasiewicz, I think I'm saying her name right. She is declared in this race. We also have Everett Mitchell. And then we have former Scott Walker appointee to the Supreme Court who was defeated, I believe, by Jill Karoski by like 163,000 votes. Doesn't seem like the best candidate, but that's who they're going to run. Now, Ben, these are supposed to be nonpartisan races, but we recognize of recent history, they've turned into partisan races. We've talked about this before, Ben, but what is the Democratic Party's stance on supporting, let's call it, the liberal candidate as we come out of the February primary and turn towards the general, presumably against Dan Kelly?
The stakes in the state Supreme Court race are hard to overstate. And after February 18th, it'll most likely be one more independent or progressive candidate and one hard right Trumpist extremist, probably Dan Kelly. Our administrative committee, our statewide governing board, has to vote 3/4 to endorse somebody in a race like that. But I would be very surprised if they did not cast that vote, because we could wind up with someone who wants to rig the next election, or we could wind up with someone who thinks that voters should decide on our leaders. And so I think this is exactly the kind of moment when having a strong state party going to bat can make a huge difference. And I would be remiss if we didn't take that opportunity.
Ben, talking about, you know, election deniers and important races, we still, last I heard, don't have a determinate race in the Doug LaFollette, Amy Loudenback. About 6,000 the lead for LaFollette. I hear that could be a electoral administrative position if Republicans were fully in charge. Ben, where do we stand? Latest news, what can you tell us?
Doug is ahead, and it looks like that lead will be durable. We'll see if Republicans try to call for a recount, if they're ready to pay for something like that or not. But, you know, I think that's a race that we're gonna win. And that means the big lie failed its tests pretty much up and down the ballot in Wisconsin state offices. I only wish it failed hard enough to be able to take out Senator Ron Johnson at the same time.
Well, Ben, that is the only real disappointment, that and the Derek Van Orden. But Ben Wickler, really appreciate you coming around on short notice. Congrats to the Dems. More Devil's Advocates on the other side. Going to the phones, 844-967-2789.
Thank you, Ben.
Good work. Sleep well. I most likely kill you in the morning.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal. Only politics.
It's the one and only Eagle Double G. And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. So if you got something to say, hit us up right now at 844-967-2789.
Crew Tog in the hissy, Dom?
The old Double G.
This one does throw me back to college.
Oh, for sure.
And the place where we lived. College roommates. You know, we got to remember, we got new friends finding us each and every day. People don't know the glorious story of the Devil's Advocates.
We shared a few yesterday, but yes, long
college
time.
Roommates.
30 years, over 30 years we've known each other.
Well, man. We shared them with some of our colleagues here in civic media.
They still came into work today, so that was good.
They did, but they look at us differently now. 844-967-2789. Your chance to sound off on last night's elections before we hit the end of this big show. We're not going till 2 in the morning tonight.
No. Thank you, Ben Wickler, Chair of Wisconsin Democratic Party.
Yes, thank you, Ben. Jack from Merrimack, thanks for listening, man. What do you got for us?
Jack from the Mac, what's up?
Well, it seems to me that Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes are pretty much on the same page in terms of their policies, and it also seems that the attacks against both of them were pretty much the same. Be careful, these guys are dangerous, they're weak on crime. And the only difference I can see between those two candidates, the major difference, Mandela Barnes is black. And that means that the difference between Tony Evers winning and Mandela Barnes losing is racism, period, flat out. 50% plus of this state must be pretty racist. And that's a pretty disgusting thing for me to think about. With
Jack, I don't want to cast it all under the racist broad brush. Here's what I would say. Certainly, I feel like those crime ads attacking our buddy Mandela Barnes, I certainly feel like they had impact. Why do I feel that way? We saw the shifting in the polls, right? We know it had impact. And certainly, I would say, yes, can we attribute any of that to racism? Probably, absolutely, Jack, yes. But there are differences between Mandela Barnes and Governor Tony Evers. A, Governor Tony Evers is the incumbent governor of the state. B, Mandela is more progressive. I mean, Tony never got caught up in the activism of things like abolish ICE and defund the police. And I'm not saying that is the position of Mandela Barnes, Jack, but it was certainly cast that way. And it was hard to cast Tony in the same light. I mean, you could say
his reaction
to Kenosha was ineffective, but he didn't look like Tony Evers didn't look like, as you referenced before, Jack, the Daryl Brooks, the parade murderer from Waukesha. The fact that there are so many, you know, the fact that they had this trial going on right before the election in Waukesha, this tragedy still fresh, November 21st, the 1 year anniversary of this tragic event, Jack. And the fact that Ron Johnson had no qualms utilizing this. Well, I know where Ron's head was at, and I can certainly look at the undervote relative to Tony Evers. And I can tell you, Jack, you make some pretty good points, man.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I mean, I think Barnes would make an excellent senator, and he's still young. You know, six years from now, he could still be a really strong force. And I certainly hope that he does continue his political and his activist career, because he's been a real boon to positive direction of this state, I think.
Jack, I think, again, we agree with you because we like Mandela Barnes. He'll have a future. I mean, the guy's 35. We didn't even start the Devil's Advocates radio show, the greatest radio show ever.
Ever.
Dom and Crew were in our early 40s when we started doing this show. Now we're like 38, and I don't know how the clock's going backwards.
Thanks, Jack. Yes, very
concerning.
That one's
for Roxanne.
Nice. Very concerning. I mean, and ultimately, are these Dems? You know, again, we talk about the racism. Racism, it is a thing. It goes everywhere. It creeps everywhere to people and parties across this nation. So are there people who voted for Tony Evers and not for Mandela Barnes who did so specifically because he was black? Yeah, odds are probably there's some of those out there, Jack. Thanks, man.
Well, we looked at Dane County, Milwaukee County, these very blue areas, Jack, and there was still undervote for Mandela.
Yes.
844-967-2789. Mary from Tosa. Mary, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi, Mary.
Hey, Crute and Dom. Many of us are celebrating the outcome of the election, with the exception of the Senate race. But I think something that's missing from this conversation is a huge part that Devil's Radio has played in the outcome. After the 2016 election, I recall the thing that picked me up was hearing Devil's Radio, and you're continuing to this day. Thank you, thank you.
Well, Mary, we promised. Come hell or high water, no matter what the outcome was, Dom and I were doing a show today. And Dom was probably going to drink tequila.
Mary, thank you. Go ahead. You got more thoughts, Mary?
No, that's all. Just keep it up.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you so much. We will take maybe a little victory lap. As Craig Gilbert pointed out, Michaels underperformed in Waukesha over 2018.
WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, the Shaw. I feel like we've made certain investments in Waukesha County, Dom.
So not only did Michaels underperform in Waukesha, where we have those fine stations.
You're welcome.
Evers overperformed in Dane County over 2018.
We've been on the air here since May of 2019. Devil Radio went on the air 92.7. You're listening right now if you're in Madison. Went on the air in May of 2019. We're 3.5 years on the airwaves. And we keep delivering victories for Team Blue. You're welcome.
You're welcome, everybody.
844. Thank you for acknowledging our greatness.
Thank you, Mary.
844-967-2789. Wisco Paul, I bet you got a spotted cow in hand.
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, I had a couple on hand last night. Thanks for the coverage last night. It was so much
Yeah, the team killed it, man. Civic Media, we got the best people.
Awesome. I mean, it was just, I don't want to give you too big of a head, but it was totally awesome. I mean, when you compared it to, I won't mention any stations.
Watered-down, whitey-righty talk radio coverage of the supposed red wave that was coming?
Yeah, right. Well, I was watching the coverage on TV, and your coverage was way, way superior. And I think the only thing about Barnes is he didn't get out of the gate quick enough when Johnson started hammering him on the parade and other things. I think if he would have done that, maybe he would have won. I don't know. But, hey, kudos for your coverage. I can't say enough good things about your station and what you put together. Thank you, too. And, hey, none of that, you guys are always happy and funny. And that's really cool, too. So have a great night. Thanks.
Thanks, Paulie.
Paulie, I can tell you, some days we're faking that part.
No, come on, man. I'm a lot happier now than I was when I woke up this morning.
Well, that's the tequila talking and the pancakes in your belly. Nick, we saw you, man. Sorry we didn't get to you today, but give us a call back tomorrow. We're doing it again, man, because we are the glorious, winning, victorious blue team that is Civic Media, that is the greatest radio show ever. Devil's Advocates, thanks for listening.
This year we'll make enough on the harvest that I'll be able to hire some more hands, and then you can go to the academy next year.